ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 17th of March. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. US President Donald Trump has criticised allies who have rebuffed his requests for assistance to secure the Strait of Hormuz. There's been no direct request for Australia's assistance. Donald Trump says he's asked the UK and others to send warships to the Middle East to help escort oil tankers through the Persian Gulf.
Some are very enthusiastic and some are less than enthusiastic, and I assume some will not do it. I think we have one or two that will not do it that we've been protecting for about 40 years. Why are we protecting countries that don't protect us? And I've always felt that was a weakness of NATO. We were going to protect them, but I always said when in need, they won't protect us.
Here in Australia, the rising oil prices could prompt the Reserve Bank to hike interest rates when it meets today. The conflict in the Middle East, combined with rising inflation and a tight jobs market, will be key factors in making a decision on whether to raise rates for a second time this year or keep them at 3.85%. Annie Guest reports.
Rising costs are creating anxiety and frustration amongst these shoppers in the northwest Brisbane suburb of Kapera.
Not happy with the high interest rates, especially with it going up constantly, because, with added bills and everything else. Like, the petrol's gone up. How can people live? I spent $200 on groceries. It's like, basically, I max out my credit cards all the time, each week. I pay it, then max it out, because I just can't get ahead.
With kids and a mortgage, less expendable income.
And with this being against the backdrop of the war in the Middle East, does that add an extra element of concern for you?
Of course it does. We're all relying on fuel and oil. My job, I work for an airline. What happens when we run out of jet fuel? I don't have a job. It's like COVID all over again.
Today's meeting of the Reserve Bank Board to decide interest rates comes amid energy, military and geopolitical uncertainty. Joe Masters is the chief economist at Barrenjoey Capital.
This is a very live meeting and I think it's a close call. On balance here at Barrenjoey, we think that the RBA will actually hold the cash rate steady today in favour of waiting for the next meeting, which is only 6 weeks away. That will give them probably more certainty on how the war in the Middle East is evolving. That'll give them more confidence about the impact on Australia and the global economy.
And while the unprecedented closure of the Persian Gulf is a major factor, concerns about inflation in Australia haven't gone away.
Also globally, we're still watching thematics like AI, for example, that are impacting US equity markets and also private credit markets.
The chief economist at EY Oceania, Sherelle Murphy, agrees with these points but has a different view about today's interest rate decision.
I think the Reserve Bank is going to decide to increase the cash rate by 25 basis points and that will take it up to 4.1%. That is mainly because they've got a domestic economy at the moment, so inflationary pressure, there's a tight labour market, we've got some supply shortages, and then we've added in the new global elements to the inflation problem.
And that goes beyond the potential for an oil shortage to push petrol prices up higher to the potential impact on worldwide transport. And Sherelle Murphy points out a shortage of oil to make fertiliser could drive up food prices.
And that might sort of be enough to convince the Reserve Bank that, really this is not a good outlook, and so they have to act to try and pull it all in.
Sherelle Murphy from EY Oceania ending Annie Guest's report. Energy Minister Chris Bowen says it will take some time for the release of additional fuel from reserves to have an impact at the bowser. Fuel suppliers and distributors can now release up to 20% of their reserves so long as they can show the additional petrol and diesel is getting to areas of shortage in the regions. And today, the ACCC is meeting with major fuel suppliers, retailers and automotive groups to discuss fuel pricing. The Leader of the Opposition spoke to me earlier from Albury. Angus Taylor, thanks for joining AM this morning.
Great to be with you, Mel.
Now, you've been critical of the federal government's handling of fuel supply issues. Do you think the minister should be taking more actions, additional actions?
Well, he absolutely should have. He's had one of our refineries, one of our two refineries, exporting all of their fuel as a result of his emissions requirements, and they should be selling it locally. He should also be on top of the issue. Last week, on Tuesday, there was no problem at all. By Thursday, it was a national crisis. He simply hasn't been on top of it. And the result is, out here in regional areas, we've got farmers and truckies and others deeply concerned. We've got sowing just starting now for the planting season for our food. That's a massive issue to be concerned about or not able to access fuel at this time.
Chris Bowen points to the biggest impact on petrol prices being the global oil price. Aren't variable commodity prices part and parcel of global trade based on market principles?
Sure, of course, but shortages are not part of that. There's a role for the government to play in dealing with shortages. When I was minister, we had real concerns about AdBlue, you might remember, which is necessary to keep our trucks going across Australia. And we dealt with those shortages and prevented them from becoming a crisis. And Chris Bowen has been asleep at the wheel. As energy minister,
When it comes to dealing with shortages, there's supply and demand, right? There is still supply coming into the country. There's more being released from the minimum stockholding obligation that you agree. Do you think then there needs to be the issue of demand being addressed?
Well, Chris Bowen has to be across where the fuel is and how to ensure it gets to customers. And to have one of our refineries selling all of its fuel overseas at a time like this, not selling to domestic customers, I think was an egregious error. But that was requirements put in place by him.
So, if that distribution of where it's being sold is an issue, do you think the government should be doing more to intervene in who distributors and sellers are making business with?
Well, it should be across where there are shortages, and it should be making sure that the distributors are getting fuel to those customers. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. That's how we dealt with that situation, the AdBlue situation in 2021, and it's what the government and Bowen should be doing now. Now, he told us last Tuesday there was no problem, and this is the real issue, Mel. He kept telling us there was no problem, typical gaslighting from Chris Bowen, but by Thursday it was a national crisis. He was not on top of the situation, and frankly, the Prime Minister needs to take control of the situation for him.
The shortages, though, have largely been where there's been uncontracted markets for additional supply to large buyers. Do you want the government to have stronger intervention in where uncontracted fuel is sold?
Oh, look, there's all sorts of excuses Chris Bowen's been giving. But in the end, by Thursday, he said there was a national crisis. And the real issue was he wasn't on top of it, Mel. And if you're not on top of it, you can't solve the problem.
So the issue for you more is the messaging and the timing rather than what actions are actually outstanding.
No, it's recognising that we had a problem. I mean, Tuesday last week in Parliament, we were laying out the problem. We were saying, here's customers who are not getting their fuel. Chris Bowen wasn't on top of it. And the result was that we had a crisis emerge. And by the end of the week, he declared it a crisis. I mean, the guy wasn't across it. Your job as a minister is to be across it. The Prime Minister needs to take control. And this is all part of a broader context where Australians are struggling under a cost of living crisis. We've got interest rates expected to go up today. Mortgage holders paying $25,000 a year more in mortgage payments than they were when Labor came to power. It's no wonder Australians are getting frustrated.
Just if I can summarise, your issue with fuel supplies is that the messaging hasn't been appropriate. Maybe you would have liked action a few days earlier, but ultimately the amount of fuel that's been released from the minimum stockholding obligation is okay. It's just some level of export from refinery you don't want to see. That's the main difference that you would do if you were in office right now.
You'd get across it, and he wasn't. It's that simple. He had no idea what was going on. You can't fix a problem if you're not across it, and that's where Chris Bowen failed.
Do you think there need to be new oil refineries established or old ones re-established in Australia?
Well, I retained the final two, put in place the arrangements which have kept them. It's deeply unfortunate that we've had one that's had to sell its fuel overseas rather than to Australians. But those refineries should be part of our economic infrastructure, if you like. They are a critical part of our fuel security in this country, and the government needs to be working with them to make sure that they are supplying Australians with the fuel Australians need.
So the two refineries is sufficient so long as they're supplying Australia and not exporting. Is that your position?
Well, what I'm saying is we've got two refineries and they should be supplying Australians, and we should be doing everything we can to keep them strong.
Andrew Hastie seems to be suggesting that we need more refining capacity.
Well, look, we'd all dearly love to have more refining capacity. I agree with that. But right now we've got a situation where trying to build anything in this country is nigh on impossible because the economics are not working with a government that has lost control of the economy. And so, you know, this is a huge challenge. So right now the focus has got to be let's keep our two refineries going hard, selling fuel to Australians and helping to alleviate a fuel security crisis that the energy minister did not see.
You mentioned just before the expectations that the Reserve Bank will raise interest rates. Do you think that's necessary now, given the circumstances the economy faces, to rein in inflation?
I'll leave that decision to the Reserve Bank, but what's very clear is the expectation is that inflation has got so far out of control that they're going to have to continue to raise interest rates. This is completely at odds with countries across the world, peer countries across the world that aren't seeing this. The inflation was raging before the war began in the Middle East. It's homegrown. And the fact of the matter is the government told us that we turned the corner on inflation and interest rates, and yet inflation and interest rates have been going up. The government needs to take the appropriate measures to prevent that from happening. They haven't, and sadly, we expect an interest rate increase today, and if not today, very high expectation next time around.
Angus Taylor, thanks very much for speaking to me this morning.
Great to be with you, Mel.
That's Angus Taylor, the leader of the opposition there. A review of the state of research and development in Australia has found the country must do better in encouraging innovation or risk a decline in living standards. A government commission panel has recommended bold reform, including an overhaul of how research grants are administered, a new body to oversee that funding, and more tax breaks to encourage private sector investment in innovation. Tim Ayres is the Minister for Industry, Innovation and Science. Tim Ayres, thanks for joining us on AM.
It's really good to be on the show.
Before we get to the report, as we have an oil shock unfolding in the global economy, does Australia have the right industry settings when it comes to oil? Do we need more sovereign supply of crude? Do we need more oil refining capacity at home?
Australia doesn't have its own crude oil reserves. We have plenty of coal, plenty of gas. We have enormous reserves of sunshine and wind and storage capacity and hydro capacity in Australia. But we don't have geological reserves that are cost-effective of oil ourselves. So the minimum stockholding obligation that the government imposed at the beginning of our term that we effectively put into law by signing off on the regulation and implementing it is the strongest measure that has been in place for more than 15 years to secure as much fuel as possible in diesel, petrol and jet fuel, and we're managing that reserve carefully in the national interest and working carefully with the industry to make sure that it gets to where it needs to go.
So you're satisfied at the circumstances we face currently, it's enough?
Well, not complacent about these circumstances that we find ourselves in. That's why you have a minimum stockholding obligation. That's why we have a fuel reserve, is to deal with challenges and shocks like the one that we're experiencing. So we're not complacent about it at all. It has been managed on a daily, hourly basis, principally by the Energy Minister, Chris Bowen, and we'll continue to work through that over the coming weeks and months.
Now, when it comes to this report into research and development, it's given a wide range of recommendations. Is the government inclined to adopt them all?
This is a very wide-ranging report that offers a really strong menu of options for decadal reform for the research and development system.
I guess we're just trying to get a sense of what the willingness of the government might be when it points to things like reforming the maze of grant schemes, as it describes it, and the overall decline in funding. Can you reverse the decline in innovation without addressing that decline in funding and the administrative burden that comes with this maze of grant processes?
I think one of the real strengths of this report is that it points to the scale of the Commonwealth's contribution, around $15 billion, but spread across 160 programs. So there's certainly a case for consolidation and concentration of effort.
And that's one of the recommendations, setting up a National Innovation Council. Yeah. Sounds like you see a need for that.
Well, making sure that our innovation system and our research and development system are working in the national interest with clear priorities and clear missions and objectives is central to us achieving our Future Made in Australia objectives. This is all about, at the end, getting a research and development system that drives industrial growth and the reindustrialisation of our outer suburbs and industrial regions, to move from just exporting critical minerals to making critical metals and making advanced manufacturing products that produce good jobs for Australians.
The report describes uncompetitive corporate tax settings. Is the government in a position to be more generous when it comes to tax breaks, given all the other pressures on the budget?
We're not afraid of recommendations, whether about the tax system or about the innovation system more broadly. That's the challenge that we want these kind of reports to set out for us, and we're going to take our time to work them through. There's obviously budget consequences. We spend, I think, in the last year, around $4.5 billion on the research and development tax incentive. Of course, we want to make sure that that's targeted for impact for industry and to produce good jobs.
Tim Ayres, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Tim Ayres is the Minister for Industry, Innovation and Science. A new report surveying employers has revealed 70% are excluding candidates based on characteristics including their mental health and their age. National Work reporter Bronwyn Herbert.
Tim Hillier thought he was doing the right thing by disclosing to his recruiter that he had taken time out of the workforce to deal with a mental health issue.
So there was one time with a recruitment company that I disclosed and we had a little bit of a chat about it, but then I didn't get any follow-up or any job referrals. So I had that sort of negative experience where I really felt that that did affect my chances, just by being honest.
He's now working in a customer services banking role in Melbourne, where he has only recently been comfortable to disclose his mental health history.
A lot of applications, they will ask, do you have a disability of some kind? Do you need adjustments? And I used to say yes, but I'll just say no now.
An Australian Human Resources Institute survey has found a majority of employers are choosing not to hire people based on personal characteristics, including mental health. The results take in responses from 612 employers and HR decision makers. Sarah McCann-Bartlett is the CEO.
So our survey found that about 70% of employers report excluding some candidates who have certain characteristics during the recruitment process, of course, if they know that they actually have those characteristics.
A third of employers said they excluded people who revealed they had a history of mental illness, while 29% didn't progress candidates who had indicated they had a long-term illness. Around one in five reported excluding applicants with a disability or if they were aged 55 and over.
In a relatively tight labour market, by restricting their willingness to recruit these candidates, employers are still limiting their potential labour pool and, importantly, the diversity of their workforces.
How do these decision makers know this during the recruitment process?
For attributes like a history of mental illness, that would require an employee or a potential candidate to disclose, which they are not legally obliged to do so. And the employer is not permitted by law to actually ask them.
Career coach Leah Lambert says the findings from the survey are extremely disappointing.
We haven't moved on from where we've been in the past, that so many organisations are supposed to be inclusive of people with special needs, mental health issues.
The Australian Human Rights Commission has called for changes in the Disability Discrimination Act to put the onus back on employers.
Bronwyn Herbert there. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. As the Iran war enters its third week, the ripple effect is growing around the world as the global oil supply is crippled. Here, petrol and diesel prices are soaring. Today, David Leaney, an international supply chain expert from the ANU, on how panic buying is driving prices higher and why the government should start restricting sales. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on ABC Listen.